It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 320, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Matt and I, in this show, break down arguments about the sustainability of football independence, and yes, we say again just how stupid it would be to rejoin the Mountain West Conference in football. Also on this week's show, the Grimes effect on spring football, more talk about Zach Wilson, and keeping Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Join us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us this week talk with a lot less Boston accents right now. Hey, Matt, you know, people like the Boston accents, I think.
It was a thing.
It was the thing. You know, I think it'd be weird if that was your first ever Rise and Shout podcast.
You might never come back.
There is a possibility. I haven't gone back and looked at the iTunes stats to see if we had a bunch of people like just plummet in those first 10 minutes. That'd be interesting.
But you know what? If you came in and that was the first one, you might decide that this podcast is wicked pissa.
So speaking of wicked pissa, we have our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
That's from Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He asks, and if you want to do a tweet back question, you of course can do that. Tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Matt, he says, will iTunes force you to have an E explicit on future episodes if you continue to use PISA? Hashtag tweet back, hashtag rise and shout after dark podcast. I believe because of the accent, it's permissible.
I don't think iTunes really, they're in California. They don't even understand what we're saying.
No, they have no idea what that is. They're still trying to figure out what it is.
They're not, yeah, and let's be honest. They're probably all Stanford fans.
Right, right. So guess what? You know, they can go who knows what. Yeah.
Hug a tree.
Yeah, go hug a tree, Stanford.
Stanford.
So Matt, I had my wife, I said, you need to listen to the first 10 minutes. It's hilarious. And I kept bugging her about it and she listened. And then I said, hey, what'd you think of the first 10 minutes? She's like, I've heard all those things before. She wasn't impressed. So I'm glad some people were though.
Oh, apparently we had an impact on Sweeney.
We did. That's like his third tweet about it. So, I think we definitely had an impact.
Rise and shout after dark.
Rise and shout after dark. Yeah,
I think he's used that before.
He might have. Maybe we should do a second podcast. Maybe there should be an explicit version of the Rise and Shout podcast.
Yes, that's exactly what everyone needs. Yes. An explicit version of the Rise and Shout podcast.
Yes, yes, where you and I are just cussing up a storm completely only in Boston accents.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that'll work. Matt,
well, there's a couple people from work now that listen to the podcast.
Mm.
Not BYU fans per se, but just listen. I think mostly so that they have material to make fun of me with. But like when I have this,
you give
like when
them
I have
plenty of material.
What's that?
You give them plenty of material. So
oh, I do. I've armed them well. Yeah, but yeah. When I have like those little giggle attacks, like I've had now, I've got to think about like people at work are hearing this.
Oh my gosh!
See, that's awkward.
Don't worry about it. If they thought it was that bad, you know, they would have fired you already or something. Matt, how much do you love Torchies?
My love for Torchies is well documented.
Yes.
And I love the fact that they tweet back at me.
Yes, yes, they do. Well, our brother Don has a tweet bag about Torchies. All right. He says, is this month's, and he did with two apostrophes, is this month's taco of the month at Torchies, the Roscoe, which is a flour tortilla that includes a waffle, fried egg, and maple syrup, really a taco?
There's hashtag, bacon in it.
Hashtag tweet bag. Hashtag it is delicious. And the, you know, of course, he tweeted at Torchies. Matt, you said it also has bacon?
I believe there is also bacon in
there. In the Roscoe.
Yes.
I would have to say it's a taco, right? I mean, it's in a tortilla.
Oh, it's a taco.
It's
now,
not a burrito. What is he claiming, burrito status here? Right?
I think he's wondering if it's not chicken and waffles. It's a taco.
Even if it was chicken and waffles, you could have a chicken and waffles taco.
Yes,
right?
You can. Yes, you can. As a matter of fact, you should.
You have pastor. tacos, and that also can be made into a sandwich or just a side dish, right?
See, that sounds like a real thing. You said that weird. That was that not an English word? What is this thing you're talking about? I don't know what that is.
How about that, gringo? That,
what can I?
My gosh, you live in Louisiana and lived in Texas. You should be able to understand some basic Spanish.
What's I know what a pastor is, but I don't think that I don't understand what that
it's
has
a
to
certain
do with.
Way of it's a certain way of cooking meat.
Oh, see, I did not know this.
So it's but I'm just saying, like, you can do that. Like, it's not by itself. It's not a taco, right? It's a way to cook meat, but you can have tacos
you can put it in
al pastor,
taco.
Right? You can have them right. with just like you can have carnitas in a taco. You can have them in a burrito, like. That's why I don't understand Don's question, to be honest. It's a taco. It's in a tortilla in taco style.
See, I think if it were just fried egg, maple syrup, and bacon inside a tortilla, it might not. I think it's the presence of the waffle that's confusing people.
Mm.
But it's still a taco.
It doesn't matter. I mean, whatever you put in there. I mean, this is obviously one you're going to find probably on the streets of Mexico City, right?
Not like, Del Torchis expands there.
Del Torchis expands there. But, you know, like. You can have whatever you want. Now, I have to say, I'm not a flour tortilla guy with my tacos. I prefer corn, but it's still a taco. I mean, that's a
they will often
thing.
They'll let you swap that out at Torchy's.
Yeah. And I did. I ordered something the last time I was there, and I said, no, I'll take a corn tortilla.
Tortilla.
Gracias. All right, Matt. It's time for the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, the 23rd ranked in the nation BYU gymnastics team is headed to the NCAA regionals in Salt Lake City. According to both BYUCougars.com and, I'm sorry, number 21. Did I say 23rd?
You did say 23rd.
So they will be there on Saturday, April 7th, which happens to be the same day as the spring game. So there you go. The meet begins at 4 p.m. Mountain Time at the Huntsman Center then. So congratulations to the Cougars and making the NCAA Regionals. Matt, men's volleyball continues to be awesome. They're ranked second in all of the land. They have two games left. They're coming off a bye week, and then this weekend they host number 14, Concordia Irvine, and number 13, Grand Canyon. And that will conclude the regular season for them. They have yet to lose a conference game.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So congratulations. The Cougars are doing great. And they will have, headed into the conference tournament, a chance to be undefeated. Which, you know, after some of their struggles, they're... before the conference season started, we thought, you know, this wasn't likely going to be the case, but they are rolling.
But this is when you want to be playing your best right now.
That is correct. Matt, the NBA has this hashtag NBA rank thing where they rank stuff, which I love because we love ranking stuff, right? And it's great for debating.
We're into ranking stuff.
Yes, we do that. But Matt... They did, and I'll quote them, it's the 100 most influential players ever in the NBA, okay? And at 81 on that list is none other than BYU graduate Danny Ainge. 82nd, sorry, I said 81, but it's 82nd on the list. Now, he is not just there for his playing days, which are mentioned here, and it's also because, of course, he's been coach of the Phoenix Suns and is now the general manager of the Boston Celtics. But Matt, hey, there we go. We got a BYU guy on the list.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool, actually, right? I mean, if you go through, there's some pretty big names on this list. I mean, he beat Havlicek.
Yeah, Havlicek. He was only a few spots behind Patrick Ewing. Hey, he beat Rasheed Wallace. That's something.
Beat Kyrie Irving and Reggie Miller.
So, and of course, I think almost all of that has to do with his post-playing days, right? I mean, not that he wasn't a good player, but he was not Reggie Miller's level as a player, but they're just saying, you know, and now, of course, Miller does just a halfway decent job of calling college basketball games during March Madness. Are you a Miller guy? I'm not a Reggie Miller guy as an announcer. I liked him as a player.
As an announcer, I loved him as a player.
Loved him as a player. As an announcer, I prefer, I like Weber. Are you a Chris Weber guy? Do you like Chris Weber?
Yeah, I like Chris Weber. I can listen to some Chris Weber.
I mean, he gets fired up during good games, which I appreciate that because I think you should in March Madness. Get a little fired up if the game's
It makes it fun to watch, excited. Right?
Yeah. But anyway. And the last thing is, Matt, there was a DallasCowboys.com article, which a lot of the teams are doing this, where it's kind of like, hey, this is a guy that could possibly be picked by our team. And one of their recent articles was on Fred Warner. All right. So I want your reaction to this. Okay. They, you know, talk about how he could help the Cowboys, blah, blah, blah. Don't care because I don't care about the Cowboys. All right. But this is the piece that was interesting coming out of you know, it doesn't actually say who wrote the piece, but Warner has helped himself, it said, at both the combine and individual workouts, which we've heard, right? That, you know, obviously his numbers were good. His athleticism is starting to surface combined with this production and nose for the ball. Warner is a solid day two pick, which you and I have talked about, probably is a day two pick, and might have jumped himself into the second round. Matt, do you buy or sell Fred Warner as a second round draft choice?
I'm going to buy it.
I'm going to sell it. I still think he's third round. But we've talked about this before. All it takes is one team, right?
You only need one of them to like you.
Somebody in the back of the second round who's not going to pick, either not pick in the third round or pick late in the third round, to say, gosh, we really want this kid. We're not going to wait.
And the next guy on our board, we think we can get.
Yeah.
With this later pick, right? Yep. That's all that right combination right there is what puts somebody like Warner into that second round.
Yeah.
Just any type of question in their mind that they won't be able to get him later, and that's really the guy they want.
Yep. And they see him as a potential starting linebacker on their team, then it's certainly worth a second round pick, right? If you see them as a potential starter in year one, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, it's interesting. I still think he goes third, fourth round somewhere. I think he is in that. That's you know, but I think he's you know, he's obviously, his combine, his workouts, all this stuff has created some buzz beyond what maybe he had coming out of his senior year, which is great for him. Good for Fred Warner. We're going to get to some draft stuff later about the NBA, where I don't feel as comfortable about, you know, some people's draft status. Matt, yikes. Football, spring football is still running, and let's start with the offense and Coach Grimes and his staff, okay? And so let's talk some spring football. We've got a tweet bag question from Daniel Smith. That's at Mountain Biker Daniel. And Daniel has this to say, specifically, what is your favorite thing about Coach Grimes so far? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on in, hashtag go Pau Ranger, and hashtag BYU football 2018. That's a lot of hashtags, Daniel. Matt,
do you hashtag, have a... Hashtag hashtags.
Hashtag hashtags? What are you? Who are you? Like, what was that? That was terrible.
I'm not the one who's using a gazillion hashtags.
He used five, which is not a gazillion, actually.
I rounded up.
But anyway, what's your favorite thing about Grimes so far?
I think that there's this sense of discipline that's being infused that we haven't seen before. And I also love the fact that all of this offensive stuff feels wide open. Like, we're going to really figure out who our best players are, put them on the field, and then figure out how we make those guys win football games.
Yeah. I think that's a great one. I was listening to his interview that he did after the second scrimmage, in which the offense had a bunch of mistakes. I don't know if you saw any of these quotes, but I watched the interview, and he talked about the fumbles. And he said a line that I love, which is, all of them know that if they do that, if they fumble in games, they will not play. And I was just like, that's what I want to hear the offensive coordinator say, right? Like, that you can make mistakes, but dropping the football hitting the ground as a running back is not an acceptable outcome, right? And I love that discipline that you also talked about. That's probably but that quote is maybe my favorite thing that he said among a bunch of things that I've enjoyed that he said. Matt, speaking of his staff, there is, of course, a new offensive line coach, and, you know, Ryan Pugh is his name. And, you know, here he is, came kind of out of nowhere for us as a staff, and where he had been at UT San Antonio and all that. And we look at that, you read the quotes or whatever, but right now, Matt, Dick Harmon had this in his latest piece. The buzz, there's a really good buzz about the offensive line. Are you buying or selling a better offensive line for 2018?
It's spring football, baby. I'm buying all of it. I'm buying everything. I'm buying the whole store out. I'm taking all of it. We're preseason national champs. No, I'm buying that too. I'm buying that too. I really am.
All right, so offensive line, big buzz around them. You're buying it because it's spring football. Matt, another one that's interesting. We've talked about the tight ends a couple of times. One tight end that we have not talked a lot about is J.J. Nwigwe. He moved from offensive line to tight end last year, was mainly and almost exclusively really used as a blocking guy. They're talking a little bit about his pass-catching abilities. Matt, buy or sell J.J. Nwigwe as a part of the passing game in 2018?
I'm selling that.
I'm selling that as well.
This is one of those, like, this is just, we needed something else to write about. This is kind of a cool story. Everybody loves throwing linemen the football. He's going to be a blocking tight end.
Under three catches for J.J. Nwigwe this year.
Catches or looks?
Catches.
I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the over, but I think it's like four. I think just because I think you've got to do that a couple of times, and I think you'll catch them because they're going to be like a rollout where basically, you know, the quarterback's handing it off to him over 5 yards, right? And I think you'd do that a couple of times a year so that on film they worry about it enough that it, you know, has maybe some effect. Matt, the QBs, of course, everybody wants to talk about the quarterbacks this year and for good reason. But Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
Do we do that twice? I don't know if we do.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Yeah, but you gave me an opening, so I went for it.
All right. Justin had this to say. Rumors say Wilson is looking really good. Should we be concerned Tanner and Bo haven't snatched up the job yet or excited that he's that good? Or is it just a meh because Tanner is still hurt? Hashtag tweetbag. Matt, we talked a lot about Wilson last week. And by the way, I think his mom retweeted our podcast. I'm pretty sure. So
that's pretty cool.
Because we had him in the headline. We talked a lot about him, Matt. I mean, to answer Justin's question, is this a matter of he's really, you know, knocking the socks off? Or do you think this is, well, Bo has been a little down with being sick, but obviously Tanner's not participating fully. Where do you land on this?
I think this is legit. I think Tanner not participating fully, you know, we don't know what that means yet, right? Or what that's going to mean in the fall. But I believe that this is really any man's job right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with
you. So I think what we're seeing here is that there is potentially another viable option at the quarterback position. And I'm not, you know, we've been in situations like this before where I say, well, you got two quarterbacks means you don't have any quarterbacks. I don't think we're there here. I think we're just, it's spring ball and it's still early enough that we can experiment, give people reps and figure out which of these guys that we like. That's what this means, is that we've got options that look good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to remember that besides the fact that there's a new offensive coaching staff, which we've talked about before, and that means they may look at this position very differently than Ty Detmer did or that Robert and I did. The other piece to me is Tanner's film for the last season and kind of a half, wasn't great, right? His production wasn't great, okay? And Bo Hodge has a quarter and a half of really good football to his name, right? So you look at that and you go, and some people are like, all of these two veterans. I'm like, Bo Hodge has hardly played, so it's not as if he's truly an incumbent. And Tanner didn't play very well and is hurt. So to me, I don't know that we should have any level of concern, because I think this was natural that some of the newcomers were going to get a look. Obviously, Critchlow's name not being in it as much is probably not a good sign for him, that the coaches and the press aren't talking about him as much. But, you know, you don't know. Jared Roundsville has this to ask Matt. That's at J. Roundsville on Twitter. Could Zach Wilson be our QB this year? Hard to believe, but it seems the coaches really like him. Odds we make it to a bowl game with a true freshman at QB. Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag go Cougs. Matt, odds, you know, if he's the starting quarterback, what kind of odds do you give us to make a bowl game? 50? Less? More?
I think I'd give us 50, but I don't know that Zach Wilson, the quarterback, is a total game changer for me on those odds. And let me explain to you what I mean by that. So the coaches are going to put the best guy on the field. And I think even with the quarter and a half that we have of Bo Hodge, I think Bo Hodge is a guy that could take us to a bowl game. So if the coaches believe that Zach Wilson is the better choice than Bo Hodge, then they also believe that Zach Wilson can get us to a bowl game. And could they be that far off? Yeah, I guess they could. But I think that overall this team's got a decent chance of getting into a bowl game. And if it comes down to a decision between Zach Wilson, Bo Hodge, or Tanner Mangum, maybe any three of those guys could get us there. I don't know. We don't know yet.
Yeah. You and I think agree on principle, but I'm going to build on and maybe tweak what you said a little bit. I think if Zach Wilson is the starting quarterback for the entire year, that we make a bowl game, and here's why. I think he only is the starter in game one, despite the fact that it's a new coaching staff, if he is head and shoulders better than the two incumbents, and maybe three incumbents, throw Critchlow in there for good measure. Because I think coaches typically are not likely to start a freshman unless they're way better than the other quarterbacks, because of the risk, right? And you're looking at Kalani Sitake maybe thinking, this is my job on the line, right? This decision could sink me if we start the wrong quarterback. And maybe he's thinking that way, maybe he's not. I don't obviously have any insight to the way he's thinking about it. But I think if they proclaim at the end of fall camp, Zach Wilson's our guy, I'm going to feel pretty good about it, because I think if they think everybody's kind of even or close, you start Tanner or Bo, right? You don't start the freshman. So right. I think it actually increases our odds if he's the quarterback. Now, if he's the quarterback because he has to come in game four because we're terrible, that's a whole different scenario, right? Then they, with everybody healthy, decide he's the new guy, right? But I'm with you. I don't know that it changes it dramatically, right? Unless, of course, he's a phenom and we just didn't know that yet.
And maybe he is. Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be pretty awesome. And quite frankly,
actually pretty awesome.
Maybe this offensive system and the running backs and the tight ends will be so good that, quite frankly, any of these guys could take us to a bowl game, right? That's another possibility, right? That the system is that much better than last year's, that you put any of these four guys we've talked about today and you win six or seven games. That's possible, right? We don't know. Defensive side of the ball, Matt. So a friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, had an article, I think today, about spring practices and been, you know, most of it's been about the offense, obviously, because of the changes there. But defense, you know, wasn't great last year. You and I talked about that. They weren't terrible, but it wasn't exactly, you know, a banner year for BYU defense. You know, he talked about how they're kind of going to play small ball, if you will. And by that, he doesn't mean putting smaller people on the field. He's really talking about, you know, Satake has said this, Lamb, everybody said this. We're going to put the best 11 folks on the field. And examples of that is Gunwalaku moving to safety, Zane Anderson moving up to linebacker, Taki Taki moving from defensive end to linebacker. So Matt, are you buying or selling all of these position changes on the defense?
I'm buying it. I think that I think what this shows is, you know, we all sat around last year waiting for them to make certain kinds of adjustments that didn't come through, and some of that was, you know, because of injuries and other types of issues. But what this is like a wholesale, we're going to just break this thing down, figure out who the best athletes are, get them on the field, get the right people into the right spots so that we can maximize people's potential, let people play to their strengths. You got a guy like Austin Kafensis, for example, that, you know, we talked about this last week. I didn't see him kind of breaking through to become a feature in the backfield, right? But he's too good of a talent. He's too good of a talent to leave him on the sidelines. So you got to figure out a way to get him on the field, and you need a little bit of depth there in the defensive backfield, and you're trying to do some things and move some guys around, and so it kind of makes sense. But I think what they're doing here is trying to get the best 11 players they can on defense.
Yeah, you know that you and I disagreed on Kafensis's potential role on the offense. Obviously, you were closer to where the coaches were. I was.
I think I might have even said last week to not be surprised if he was moved to defense.
I believe you did. So you know, I look at that, and I'm not against the move, because I think Kafensis is the kind of athlete that can do that, right? Like if you were playing, you know, if you're playing NCAA football, you might make that move, right?
Well, it's not unheard of for a quarterback to play safety.
Yeah, I mean, people talked about it with, do you remember Taysom senior year? There were people that wanted to move him over there.
Steve Young. They were going to make Steve Young a safety.
I mean, again, great athletes. The thing it says to me is, and I believe it's Preston Hadley in this article, I think what it says, this specific move, is they're not 100% after Austin Lee, Gunwalaku, and Warner. They're clearly don't believe they have the depth to get through an entire season at safety.
Right. So they're going to grab the best athletes that they have available and provide that depth.
Correct. So, I mean, I think they're comfortable with Gunwalaku, Warner, and Lee. I am guessing at this point that Kafensis is probably, maybe not by the end of fall camp, but eventually is that number four guy. Or otherwise you don't, I don't know that you do it at this stage of his career, right? As a guy that's going to be a junior. You know, if he's a freshman or sophomore, it's not as big of a deal, right? Because he's got plenty of time and he can not even play this year, right?
Right.
But you know, as a junior, that's how I'm interpreting it. I might be wrong, but I'm not against the move because, like I said, I think we talked about this last week, more depth at defensive back for BYU coming into the year is fantastic.
Well, and Hadley's saying, and this is, you know, this is in the article. I mean, Hadley's saying that he wants four or five guys that he wants to rotate through.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to, right? Because of injury, because of, you know, just normal rotation during a game, you have to have four or five safeties. You will. Over the course of the year. He's absolutely right. You can't just go, well, we got our two safeties, we're done, right? And it's the same with cornerbacks too, right? You don't just have two cornerbacks, right? You got, because of nickel and dime packages and because of injury and fatigue, you've got to have four, five, six cornerbacks that you can trust to put onto the field. So the part that worries me a little bit, honestly, is I thought Troy Warner's the best cornerback we had. So I still am not 100% sold on that move. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm not 100%. But, well, you know, I can be wrong. I've been wrong before.
I think that it makes more sense for him to try and play that at the next level.
Yeah, maybe so.
And I think that's a consideration when they do this type of thing.
Yeah. It probably is. So, Matt, I tried to get him on the show this week. I think we're going to try to do it for next week. Ryan Teeples, who's kind of at sports guy, right? At BYU sports guy BYU. I forget what his Twitter handle is, but you guys can use the Google machine. He wrote an article for ESPN 960 about BYU independence and its sustainability. So there's been a lot of BYU Cougar Board and Twitter chatter since the end of the football season, and then it really spiked upward when rumors circulated that Gonzaga might leave the WCC to join the Mountain West or a different conference, and that people said, see, independence is not sustainable, okay? So I'm not going to read Ryan's article. I linked to it. I've sent it out. You guys can all find it. But we're going to go through it a little bit because it's at SportsGuyRyan, by the way. I butchered his Twitter handle.
Yeah, I was waiting for the right window to throw it in there. So
all right. So he basically trashes the argument that independence is not sustainable. And he basically talks about the money. And I think this is where it really comes down to. He's assuming, and I think based on what we know it's true, BYU is making about $10 million a year from TV money, all right? And gets about $67 million a year total in revenue, okay? Which is actually really good, puts BYU as one of the best G5 or non-P5 school in the country as far as athletic revenue goes. So Matt, what's your take? I mean, this is no surprise to you. You and I have been saying this for forever, right?
Yeah, we've been saying this for a long time.
So Jeff Johnston at Jeff J BYU says this. Number one, can you do some awesome Mangum gloating about how dumb it is to say independence is not sustainable for BYU football? So Matt, would you like to gloat?
Hey, everybody. We were right.
We were right. If you didn't think so, you were wrong.
What I really love in Ryan's article is he's got a whole section called What is Sustainable? And he puts sustainable in quotes. That's good stuff.
Well, and this is the thing. If you look at his original tweet that from this morning, or yesterday morning, I'm sorry, talking about the story, you get a bunch of Ute fans, of course, jumping on saying, Pac-12 school. But almost all of their comments are about how lame it is that BYU fans think it's sustainable. No facts, right? And that's the thing with a lot of the BYU fans that don't think it's sustainable. I always hear things like this. Well, it's just not sustainable. Okay?
But what does that mean?
Tell me more. And you don't get anything, right? Because in the end, let's get to the second part of Jeff's question. He says, number two, also, is being a G5 football school sustainable? So let's dive into something that Ryan lays out in a nice little spreadsheet. Matt, a lot of non-P5 schools, and quite frankly, a few P5 schools, only are able to maintain football and probably their entire athletic department because they get money from the university or the state. So think about that for a second. Almost all of these schools are getting some type of subsidy from the university and or the state. Okay? UNLV would be negative $28 million without that.
Yikes.
Okay? Right? You know, BYU doesn't get basically any subsidy, really. I mean, they get a little bit from the school, from fees and different things, but comparatively speaking, it's very minimal. You know, and obviously some of these top programs, like say in Oregon, they don't need a subsidy, right? You know, their revenue is very, 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 very high, $111 million according to the numbers that he put together. But he makes the argument, Matt, and buy or sell this argument, that actually being a G5 school is what is not sustainable. Being outside of the P5 is what is not sustainable, not independence. Matt, buy or selling that being a G5 football school is long-term unsustainable.
I'm actually going to sell that.
I'm buying it, dude. You and I have talked about this. I think within 15 years, there is no G5 because they're playing in their own division. I think that is where this is going because of the disparity in the numbers. I mean, it's crazy the difference between, say, even a Boise State and an Oregon or USC or Notre Dame, right?
So you think those numbers will create such a wide gap in talent that it won't even be worth it for these teams to compete against each other?
I don't think it has anything to do with talent. I think it has all to do with facilities and being able to keep up financially. Because talent is cheap. Everybody can get talent, right? Because it's free, basically. You know, that's not actually true. But everybody spends this, quote-unquote, the same on talent. Now, again, that's not actually true because you can do the stipends now. But it's still relatively a small piece of your budget. But what happens when you've got to upgrade your facilities again when they start wearing out? Like some of these people that upgraded their facilities 15 years ago, they got to upgrade their facilities again. Where's that money going to come from? Like if the universities, which some of these universities are basically, you know, running on fumes and don't have a lot of money. You going to raise student tuition again? Fees? I don't know. I can't understand how Wyoming is going to still have a football program 15 years from now. What happens when the Mountain West kind of implodes and, you know, Boise State and some of the top schools leave to join some of the remaining American Conference schools because a couple of those got plucked by the P5 or some other conference? How's Wyoming going to stay as a FBS school? You know what I mean? Without that couple million a year from the Mountain West TV contract? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. You've got a good point. I mean, that's trouble for them.
Yeah.
But I don't know that moving into a lower division solves that problem.
Sure it does. It changes the whole game. If you're playing an FCS schedule and that's who you're competing against, that, you know, their revenues, expenses, just it changes drastically, right? North Dakota does not spend, you know, nearly as much on football as even Hawaii does. You know, we'll see. I mean, the other piece was the TV money. A lot of people said, yeah, well, when the contract with ESPN expires, BYU's not going to get another good contract. Ryan offers a couple of evidence that he believes it'll actually go the other way. And the two pieces of evidence are, if ESPN thought they could get it cheaper, why did they pick up the one-year extension? And it's a very solid business argument, right? And the second one is, TV contracts are up all across the board since BYU signed that deal with ESPN. Matt, buying or selling BYU, we're doing a lot of buying and selling this week, BYU getting more money on the ESPN contract or whoever they sign with, getting more money after this ESPN contract is up or not. Buy or sell them getting more.
I'm actually buying that.
Me too, 100%.
I think the example he uses is spot on. They didn't need to pick up that option.
They didn't have to pick up that option. Why would they? You'd only pick up the option if you thought if we have to renegotiate, they're going to get more. BYU will get more money.
And the question for them isn't just about BYU's record. The question is about eyeballs.
The question is 100% about eyeballs. The two things are connected, right? But they don't care if BYU's terrible. They only care if people watch the games. And more on a BYU football, if Wyoming is 10-1 and BYU's 4-5, who's getting more eyeballs?
Well, BYU is, right? And BYU's playing better opponents than that Wyoming team. So you're getting some of those games at home, and ESPN wants to carry the game when Wisconsin goes to Provo. Because people will watch that game.
Yes. And yes, if BYU's winning, more people will watch those games, right? And I don't think Ryan's making that argument. We would never make that argument that winning does not affect ratings of football games, because of course it does, right? If BYU's ranked and Wisconsin's ranked, it's going to be a higherly watched game. That's not a thing.
That is not a word. That is not a word. What you just said is not a thing.
That is not a thing. But I think what people underestimate here is the only thing right now on television that's watched live is sports and a couple of must-watch TV shows. But sports is where advertisers can, on television, be sure that commercials aren't being skipped at the same rate that they are for everything else. So it's very, very important for ESPN, Fox, CBS Sports to have content that brings eyeballs. Now, if BYU falls off the wagon completely for football, that's a big deal and will affect. I still think they'll be able to sign a contract that would way outdo what they could do with the Mountain West or the American Conference.
Well, because here's the deal, right? If you look at what the value of the Mountain West was, where was the TV value for that contract? It was basically two teams.
Right.
And so let's just say for giggles, let's just say that BYU commands what's the right way to say this? I don't want to use numbers because I don't know what the numbers were, but let's just say whatever the value is that BYU drives is half of what the Mountain West Conference was getting as a conference, and the other half was being driven by Utah. Let's just say it's an even split, even though it's not. Let's just say that it is.
Right.
And then after that, BYU and Utah are then dividing both of their shares up among a bunch of other schools that are not driving any value. No value.
Right. That couldn't, Wyoming, if they were independent.
$0.
Yeah. If they were independent, Wyoming is streaming their games.
So for all intents and purposes, BYU was giving up the value they were bringing into the conference to these other schools that weren't bringing anything to the table. And now independence provides BYU an opportunity to capture 100% of that value without having to share it with anybody. The math on this really isn't that difficult. Now, if the size of the pie for BYU, for some reason ESPN decides it's not worth what they were paying before and they bring that down, being inside of the Mountain West Conference is not helpful. The only thing that helps in a situation like that is being in a P5 conference, because you get to smooth out those rough years, because you're part of you're part of the SEC or something else that is consistently able to deliver a product that somebody's going to watch, because you have enough quality programs sitting at the table. But the Mountain West Conference was never going to offer that.
But even
so, you were always going to be in a situation where you were giving up some of your value to somebody else that wasn't bringing anything in.
But we've talked about this before. BYU plays more games on ESPN than Vanderbilt does.
Correct.
So even being in a P5, you get the money, but it doesn't guarantee you the exposure.
Nope.
Right? You know, Pac-12 games, the worst Pac-12 game of the week isn't getting an ESPN. And BYU is getting an ESPN with sometimes with UNLV. Right? I mean, that's the difference also, is that, you know, you're not beholden to some weird contract as to where and when your games will be played. You're negotiating that directly with the TV provider. Now, yeah, we end up playing super late sometimes. And I know, as a fan that's east of the Rockies, that's not always great.
They don't play them in the day anymore.
But how about this? Jared Nielsen on Facebook asked this. If one of the main goals of Indy was access to eyeballs, then mission accomplished. You can see almost every football and basketball game online or on the telly. On the telly. I like that, Jared.
On the telly.
Can you foresee any situation where we join a non-P5 conference and have media access regression? No,
oh, yeah.
I cannot. If you play a game against Fresno State and no one sees it on TV, did it even happen?
No, I think we disagree on this one question here. So I see a situation where we join a non-P5 conference. Oh, I see. I think we're interpreting the question differently.
Okay.
So I read his question as, do you see a situation where we would join a non-P5 conference and then by joining our media access regresses? Yes, I believe that if we join a non-P5 conference, our media access would regress. What I don't foresee is BYU making the decision to do that.
Yes, that's the question I was answering.
Right. You were answering, do we see a situation where BYU makes the decision to do that? I'm answering the question of, if we were to join a non-P5 conference, could you imagine a scenario where that would actually regress our media access? And I would say 100% of the scenarios would regress our media access.
Agreed. And he says, #, remember how dreadful the Mountain West Conference was.
Oh my gosh. I remember driving all over the place trying to get to watch that Florida State game.
Oh, it's terrible. It's just stupid. It was just stupid. The whole thing was stupid. I mean, that's why when people say that they want to go back, quite frankly, and I've said this on the podcast, and I'll probably end up saying it again because people just can't shut up about this, is I'm sorry, I don't understand if your brain's correctly working. Because, guys, like, you're going to give up millions of dollars for the football program, get to see fewer games, all for what? Like, all for what? So we could have been mediocre in the Mountain West last year? Because we would have been mediocre in the Mountain West last year, right? Like, we didn't have a good football team. So it wouldn't, it's not like all of a sudden we would have been like some type of national contender. Anyway.
And people are obsessed with this. I want to play games late in the season that mean something, right? Well, even if you do join a conference, and because this started to bite me towards the end of last season too, I started to have these types of feelings. But if you sit down and think about it, right, because who needs feelings? If you sit down and actually think about this for a minute, in most of these conferences, right, the games stay, quote, meaningful, I'm using air quotes here, a little bit longer just because you got your non-conference schedule tacked onto the front of your season. So, but you get 2, 3, 4 games into your conference schedule, and if you lose a couple of those, in most of these conferences, by the time you get to November, there's really only a couple of teams vying for the championship anyway. So are we saying that all of those other teams are playing meaningless football games? Certainly not.
The meaning thing is I think, is a non sequitur to me, because this whole college football system historically was based on bowl games, okay? What's the meaning of a bowl game?
It's by definition an exhibition,
right? Like, so I find that to be bizarre, a bizarre argument. Now BYU historically in the WAC in the Mountain West was in it almost every year for the conference title, right? And I see what people are saying there is that, you know, that is exciting at the end of the year as opposed to a game against UMass, right? I get that. And you're right. It is more exciting, right? To even if we had a really good season last year, you know, that UMass game, you know, or pick other game at the end of the year, it may not be very exciting, right? Because if you're having a great year, there's only a downside to that game, right? Because you can only lose. But guys, that was the same if you had Wyoming and they were terrible when we were in a conference. It was the exact same. They were terrible. Yep. If you played them and lost, it's terrible. If you don't blow them out, it hurts your ranking. It's the same thing. Now, playing for a championship, conference championship, and having, you know, conference, all conference teams, that stuff does have value. And I'm not saying it doesn't. Would I rather be in a conference? 100% rather be in a conference. You and I have talked about that a bunch of times. But not the Mountain West. Not if it's that conference. If it's a P5 conference, I'm in. If it's a super G5 conference that's trying, because at the end of the day, we can't get a good TV contract and or, you know, conference expansion happened and we got left at the, you know, outside, then maybe. But not the Mountain West, guys. There's no reason to go to the Mountain West. Zero. None.
The Mountain West is a sinking ship.
It's a sinking ship.
We need to just stay away.
Yeah. Well, Matt, we've certainly beat that horse to death. So we're going to skip a few of these tweet bag questions on this topic because we've kind of already hit it. But Gary Payne at Fast Break GP does say this: does research on the sustainability of independence meet one of the requirements of the sustainability merit badge? Hashtag tweet bag, hashtag ping bag. I believe so. Actually,
I think I'm going to just go ahead and say that that Ryan has earned his sustainability merit badge.
Nice job.
And his Peoples. And his independence merit badge.
Yes. There you go. Nice job.
Because the requirements there, they there's a lot of cross requirements.
Yes. There are. Yeah. It's one of those, like, you know. Now I can't even think of the merit badge.
It comes in a series like the citizenship.
Yeah, there you go. Nice job. Nice way to pull it out.
I don't even like the fact that I can make that joke.
Yeah, here we go. Well, men's basketball, Matt. A couple of pieces of news before we sign off today. The West Coast Conference made some changes to its schedule and to the tournament.
Did you just say schedule?
Schedule. Doesn't matter. It's late in the
podcast. Is that what you said? You Most said makes changes to its schedule?
People will have to rewind and find out for themselves. So, Matt, here's the changes, okay? And JP on Twitter, that's a JP Feinauer. Is that how you'd say that?
Says, see a question mark in his Twitter handle, but that's fine.
Yeah. Hashtag tweetbag thoughts on the WCC scheduling and tournament announcement. So what it basically boils down to is this. Okay. The instead of 18 regular season games, you're just 16 regular conference games. Okay. And then the top two people in the tournament, seeds, get to go straight to the semis. Okay. So Matt, let's first do the regular season announcement. 16 games. How do you feel about that?
I think I like that.
I hate it. That means you don't play everybody twice. You have an uneven schedule. I don't like it.
I think I'm okay with that.
If it was required to keep Gonzaga, I'm fine. But like aesthetically, I don't like it. I think you should play everybody twice. But you know, other conferences do this because they're bigger than 10 people anyway, 10 teams. So whatever, I guess. What about the conference, the tournament changes, conference tournament changes?
I'm not digging the conference tournament changes.
Wait this a second. Is, you're okay with the regular season change, but not this one?
This is all about making it easier for Gonzaga to get to the finals.
Yeah, and RPI, right? Because you don't have another game against a terrible team.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
But this is basically... But all of these are around. Like, I can get behind the unbalanced schedule because I think it's cool to have an opportunity to play some... To open up your non-conference schedule a little bit. And I think that's good for Gonzaga. I think that's also good for us. But this is basically... This is basically the conference admitting that Gonzaga is going to go to the finals every year. So let's just go ahead and not even make them play that first game.
Save them some time.
Yes. Let's save everybody a little bit of time. Don't even make them play that first game. Let them rest a little bit and blah, blah, blah. I feel like that's – now we've pandered, I feel like, a little bit too far.
Okay.
These are the types of things that led to the downfall of the Mountain West Conference.
I definitely hear you there. I think eventually
the gap is getting too wide.
Yeah.
And so now you have to either concede and let the school that's, you know, outclassing everybody kind of just govern, or you have to try and be even. Either way, somebody's going to be mad. The difference here is, you know, it's not like, well, Gonzaga has somewhere to go theoretically. So that's why you pander to them and you give them the double bye. You give them the double bye because they're not going to leave, and San Francisco's not going anywhere.
Here's the thing to me. I am okay with this change for this reason. Yes, it is about Gonzaga, 100% correct. But anybody can earn it, right? You just have to be one of the top two teams. Now, almost
you just
none
have
of
to be Gonzaga or St. Mary's.
Yeah, and I think beating St. Mary's is doable for us and other people in the conference if they, you know, increase their program.
If they really just stick their mind, you know, put their mind to it.
Well, I don't know. I think it's possible. I think right now as Gonzaga is built, I don't think anybody in the conference is going to unseat them. But this one is one that you earn as opposed to, say, a TV deal where I get more money. People can view that as they didn't earn it, even though that's not accurate either, right? Boise State deserves more of the TV contract than Hawaii, right, for the Mountain West. I mean, but all that being said, I think your last point is your best point, which is this is the stuff that tore the Mountain West Conference apart and the WAC before it, is this uneven treatment of the schools. And I think Gonzaga, if Mark Few really wants to leave, they will eventually leave, right? If it's not this year, it's next year, the year after.
I think they're leaving. It's just a question of time.
But here's the thing. I don't think it changes anything for Gonzaga, to be honest. Going to the Mountain West Conference or another mid-major conference will improve their RPI a little bit, may get them better seeds. But do you see Mountain West Conference schools getting overseeded, right? I mean, when we were in the Mountain West Conference, we were always complaining about the Mountain West Conference teams getting hosed in seeding, right? Like, I don't see Gonzaga all of a sudden getting seated where they probably should be based on the fact that now they play a slightly better conference schedule. I think this whole thing for Gonzaga, they'll make more money, which is fine. That's a reason to go. But this whole, it gives us a better shot. Like, Loyola Chicago's in the Final Four, guys, from, what are they, the Missouri Valley Conference? Like, you know, Butler did all of their damage before they even got to the Big East. It's actually gotten harder for them now. Because now they play in a better conference. So your chances
The Mountain West isn't the Big East.
Yes. But is the Mountain West substantially better than the West Coast Conference? Yes.
Yeah.
So it's going to be harder. Gonzaga's not going to walk in. They will right now because of where they're at. But eventually, they may not have those advantages. I don't know. I don't know that Gonzaga, if I were them, I'd probably want to move. But don't hold your breath that all of a sudden now you're a one seed, right?
Well, and if I were them, I would also I'd also milk this and get whatever I could out of the West Coast Conference. Which is exactly what they're doing. Like, no, we need to make a decision quickly, baloney. Yeah, you want to see everybody put their cards down on the table.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Which is what they should do. Which is
yeah, absolutely. They should all be fired if they did it differently.
Yeah, you got to go out there and do that. Matt, BYU got invited for, I think, the fourth time in school history to the Maui Invitational for basketball. They will be playing there with host Chaminade, as well as Dayton, Georgia, Kansas, Michigan State, UCLA, and Virginia Tech. That will be contested November 25th through the 27th at the historic Lahaina Civic Center on the island of Maui. Matt, combined, these teams have 198 NCAA tournament appearances, 44 Final Four berths, and an incredible, says the press release, 16 national championships. Matt, we had a tweet bag question on this one. Michael Mangum, that's actually our nephew, Don's son, says, that's at White Mike on Twitter, how big of a deal is it that BYU will be playing in the Maui Invitational next year with this set of teams? Matt, big deal? Not a big deal.
That's a real big deal. Look at the way they play. Those teams have performed in this year's tournament, right?
Yeah, for sure.
We're talking about a team like Kansas. I mean, these are great teams. So yeah, you show up to a tournament like this prepared and have a good showing, that could be really good for you. Yeah. So I'd say it's a real big deal. And who doesn't want to go to Maui in November?
only crazy people. I think it's great. I mean, you're going to play against some really good teams. You're going to have a chance to really prove yourself going into the conference regular season. And I think that's great. And one of the things, we didn't mention this, one of the things I love is they're basically mandating that you play in some type of tournament. You know, and not all the changes were about Gonzaga. Some of them were about St. Mary's. And yeah. Basically, you got to go schedule some teams that aren't terrible.
You've got to actually leave the state.
Yes. Matt, the last piece, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because this one is weird to me. Yoeli Childs has apparently going to go into the NBA draft process. Matt, I Googled Yoeli Childs' draft status. Do you know what I found? Nothing.
Right.
Nobody's talking about him for the NBA draft. Gary Payne asked this, if Mika goes undrafted last year, how would Childs get drafted this year? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Matt, I got an answer for that. He won't. He's not going to get drafted. He's undersized. He doesn't have a broad enough game for the NBA. This is fine that he's kicking the tires on it. I'm not getting this, let's declare for the NBA because we're a junior and we had a good year thing that BYU seems to be stuck in. And apparently Elijah Bryant's thinking about it too, from what we're hearing. So I just find these weird, Matt. Am I off, or do you think they're just doing what they should do?
With the way that the NBA process works now, it is kind of weird, and they've got this option where they basically get to enter the draft but not enter the draft in this little window and test the waters. Now, why these particular guys are doing it, I kind of understood when Mika did it. You know, it turned out what we didn't know at the time is that Mika was really just, he wanted to know what that looked like so he can compare it to his options overseas. Is that what these guys are doing? I mean, I don't know. But it'd be hard to be a junior in college and you're looking at, well, I'm not going to make it to the NBA, so staying another year probably isn't going to get me there, and I could just walk away now and start making decent money playing basketball in Europe. And by entering into this process, he's putting himself on all those radars. So what exactly they're trying to get out of this, I don't know. Is there somebody in, near, around the program that's giving these guys this advice? I mean, there does seem to be a trend happening now. So I wonder who everybody's talking to that they're getting this. But I agree with you. I mean, he's not getting drafted into the NBA.
He's not getting drafted Not this year. And again, I don't care what these guys do, really. I mean, for BYU basketball, it's better if they both stay, right? I mean, I don't think that's any shock to anybody. But from a personal standpoint, if they think this is, like you said, if they think doing this and walking in there and being, you know, kind of testing the waters and maybe going to Europe is the right thing for them personally, knock yourself out. That's great. What I don't understand, and I hope people aren't getting advice, and we talked about this with Mika last year, I hope he wasn't believing people telling him he was going to be a late first round, early second round draft choice, which is the impression he gave some people in interviews, right? He never said it. But if that's what the advice they're getting, you're getting bad advice, right? I think Elijah Bryant, quite frankly, might have a little bit better chance as a big combo guard. But again, I don't know if he does enough things well enough to really get a sniff. I mean, look how much better a player, Kyle Collinsworth was than either of these two guys. And it's taken him years just to get on a roster. Right? I don't know. I look at this and I'm kind of like, guys, just stay in school and the Europe thing will be there in a year. Right?
Stay in school, kids. Yeah, stay in school. It's always good advice.
Now maybe both of them are close to finishing their degree. So that piece may not have any bearing. Right? Because I don't know anything about that.
But you got to wonder this, right? And maybe I'm out of line here, but there's been a lot of discussion around the culture and the feeling around the program. A lot of discussion around how things felt different this year, and was that a reflection on certain players having left and these types of things? And then you got to wonder. You got another crop of guys that are looking at ways to get out a year early. Is there a problem?
It's possible. I don't think you can rule it out. I don't know that we have evidence that would back up that it's true, but I don't think you can rule it out. So, well, Matt, the Final Four has one side of the bracket that looks very normal. A one seed Villanova versus a one seed Kansas. Which, nice job us picking Clemson. Though
We're good at this.
They gave it to, I mean, they were in the game, right? And, you know, I liked Duke quite a bit. Nice job, Adam, on your Duke pick. But the other side of the bracket's the fascinating one, where you have Loyola Chicago, an 11 seed that nobody had ever heard of before this year, and Michigan, who a lot of people, this is like a year ahead of where they thought Michigan might be. But I thought Michigan was always a possibility because of how well they had played in the Big Ten. Matt, looking at that Final Four, who you got?
So I've got advancing into the finals. I'm taking Villanova and Michigan.
I am also taking Villanova and Michigan. Sister Jean, I'm sorry.
I have a hard time actually picking against Sister Jean, and I briefly thought about purchasing a pair of Sister Jean socks.
I want a bobblehead. I want a Sister Jean bobblehead.
But I think this is where the magic comes to an end for Loyola Chicago.
But it's quite an awesome run, isn't it?
One of the greatest. One of the greatest runs. We'll be talking about this for years.
So
they've done a very good job of capitalizing on it.
So think about this for a second. Until they got to the K-State game, you know, they beat a sixth seed in Miami, who a lot of people thought could be a dangerous team in the tournament. Okay. They then beat a three seed in Tennessee. So they didn't get something crazy like, it wasn't Wright State beat Tennessee. And now their next game that should have been UVA, but because of that, Baltimore County victory over UVA isn't. So it's Kansas State instead. And they really kind of took it to Kansas State, right? I'm sorry. I missed a game in there with Nevada as a seventh seed. They got the breaks of Nevada and Kansas State aren't the teams they were quote unquote supposed to play. but they weren't supposed to beat either of those teams either, right? So it's a great run, which, by the way, I actually enjoyed watching Nevada play. I love that their game against Cincinnati and I kind of the Twins trying to guess which one was actually the one with the ball. I was always off, and the announcers occasionally were off as well. So Matt, you've got Villanova or Michigan winning the whole thing?
I'm taking Villanova.
I am also taking Villanova. I think it will be hilarious if in this crazy, crazy tournament, a one seed ends up winning, right? Like, one of the teams we thought was likely to win ends up winning, even in a year where there was absolute chaos in the bracket, right?
This is a classic year of tournament.
Oh, it's fantastic. It was a fantastic tournament. I was sitting there. I watched a lot of it with my 11-year-old daughter. This is kind of her first year getting into it. And she is like, I love March Madness. And I'm like, I've done something right here.
You're a good father.
Well, Matt, that's all we got time for today. So anything else you want to add before we sign off?
I think I pretty much said it all.
I think you have. Well, you haven't said Wicked Pissa.
I believe that was in an hour. Right.
Yeah. We've been recording for over an hour, so it's been a while since you said it. So, but we'll be back next week to preview the spring game. Do you preview a spring game?
Sure, we do. At Rise and Shout, we do. Podcast.
And next week is maybe the most exciting week. So I skipped his question. It was from Facebook. And if you want to give us a question on Facebook, you do it at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Travis Brewer asked us a question about independence, but he finishes it with this. And sorry we missed the rest of your question, Travis, but can't wait for the MLB preview, he says. Oh, nice. Thank you, Travis.
Oh, look at that.
And he says, I need something good to put me to sleep.
Mm. Oh, that hurts a little bit.
Well, Travis, you're in good luck, because guess what we're doing next week?
MLB preview, baby.
Now, granted, opening day will have already... I was thinking of doing it tonight, but there was just way too much going on. And I think next week will be a little bit quieter, so we're planning on doing our Major League Baseball preview, which is... let's just say it. There's three or four of you that are really excited. And we'll put...
And one of those people is me.
That's right. And we'll put it right up at the front so everybody can hear it. No, I'm just kidding. We always put it at the back so that you can sign off. And we'll say, no more BYU talk.
If there was a way to watch that, you'd immediately see, like...
Well, there is a way to watch it with the new iTunes stuff.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah, we'll get to see that this year for the first time. We'll get to see that.
Oh, that's very big brother
drop.
Of us.
Yeah, that
very
is big
very brother big brother of us.
Well, we can't see individually. Like, I can't tell that Travis did it. Plus, he's going to use it to fall asleep, so it's going to keep playing, Travis.
Hey, and you know what, Travis? If you're having trouble sleeping, if there's something I can do to help, I'm glad to help.
Yeah, exactly. We're performing a community service.
That's right.
For the Rise and Shout podcast listenership.
You're welcome, Travis.
You are welcome, Travis. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Of course, go check us out on iTunes and leave us a rating, if you would. What do they call that? A review, I believe.
That's the term.
We like 4 and 5 stars. If you really think our podcast stinks, I'm not sure why you're still listening. But anyway, we thank everybody for downloading and listening. We'll be back next week, and we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
That's the way it seems. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.